So today we are very fortunate that we are having His Grace Nadia Bihari Prabhu, and now I would like to hand over the call to Praveen Govind Prabhu to introduce Prabhuji. So Prabhuji, please introduce
Yes, ma'am.
Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. My Dhanvat Pranams to all the wonderful devotees on the call. This is your servant, Praveen Govindas. So today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Nadia Bihari Prabhu. And Nadia Bihari Prabhu is a friend of all the Charlotte devotees because he used to live here in Greensboro. And we are very happy and pleased that he is here today with us. So Prabhuji spent 18 years in the corporate world. His last job was in Greensboro as a program manager for Infosys in SAP implementation. Presently, he lives in Mayapur Dham with his wife, Yugala Preeti Mataji, and his two sons, Jayant and Samarth. So Prabhuji left U.S. in 2014 and settled in Mayapur. And he took up the services as the IT manager for the Mayapur temple. And he also, in 2015, he completed his Bhakti Shastri course along with Mataji, both of them completed. And in 2016, he was working as IT manager at the ISKCON Mayapur temple. So on 2017, he completed his first module for Bhakti Vaibhav. And in early 2018, he completed his second module for Bhakti Vaibhav, and both of them completed. And at presently, they are serving, Prabhuji serving the temple with various IT services and also the Mayapur Institute. So today, he will be speaking on the topic Ultimate Sacrifice of Sage Dadichi. So with this, I would like to hand over Prabhuji and to take up from here. Nadia Bihari Prabhuji, could you take over from now? Hare Krishna.
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhuji. And it's really my pleasure and honor to be with this group because I hold it dearly. I was there for many years in Greensboro. So it's really good that I get in touch with some of you now. as we start, this is from the sixth canto, which some of you might have already read about Dadichi. As recently in the Mayapur Institute, we were going over Dadichi's sacrifice, and it really attracted me in terms of its story. So I thought I would speak about that today. So as we start. Om, start with some prayers.
Yes, please.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Jatam Tato Deya Mudirayet Nastapayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Vancha Kalpa Tarupyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha Om Ajnanati Nirandasya Ajnananjana Shalakaya Chakshonan Nilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As we start, I wanted to start with a small story about Paramvir Chakra, which many of you may have heard of. It is an award given, the highest award of gallantry given in the Indian Army if somebody displays exceptional bravery in any war. Mostly it's given posthumously. So a small story there of a person named Nirmaljit Singh. Now, in 1971, there was this war between India and Pakistan. And it was that the government had positioned different, some of the airfields, air bases were to be protected because Pakistan Army was going to come into any of those and destroy, and then it will weaken the Indian Air Force attacks. So the government had posted two officers at the Srinagar Air Base. One of them was this Nirmaljit Singh. So it was not really expected, so there was not too many people there. But early in the morning, in the winter haze, they heard two bomb shells drop on the runway. So immediately, they had a program to get up and go into the air within 2 minutes of any attack. So they very quickly got into the air, and out of the two officers, one was sort of lost in the haze and he sort of lost his way and moved out. Then only Nirmaljit Singh was left, and he saw that there were about 6 fighter jets from Pakistan attacking that airbase. Now he had a choice to run away from there, but he sort of turned back and started giving them to fight back with his fighter jet again. He brought down 2 of those jets, and after fighting them for about 15 minutes or 10 minutes, and pretty soon he had enough hits from the other jets that his plane crashed and he left his body. Now, meanwhile, the rest of the Indian Air Force got alerted and they were able to come and rescue that airfield. So at the end of it, just 2 days after that, the war got over and everything went back to normal. But during this period, Nirmaljit Singh had sacrificed his life for protecting that airbase, and ultimately he was considered as one of crucial persons for winning the war. So he was awarded this Paramveer Chakra medal. Now what does Paramveer Chakra got to do with Faith Dadiji? See, the medal has one symbol which many people may not recognize, but it is a symbol of Vajrayud. Vajra is like thunder, and Ayud is the weapon. So Vajrayud was a weapon of thunderbolt, which was made from Dadichi's bones. That is the story we're going to talk briefly. What was the need? How was that weapon made? And why was it necessary for that weapon? So Paramveer Chakra, this medal itself was inspired by Sage Dadichi's sacrifice. And thus, anybody who sacrifices their life or even shows so much bravery, that they have such a symbol of faith religion. Now, one may ask, what is the need for somebody to sacrifice anything? For that matter, somebody might even question that why should we do any sacrifice? That may be not a good idea to sacrifice. So in fact, some of the Prabhupada disciples, early times when they were hippies, they were so much into selfish sense gratification that they were totally shocked when Prabhupada told them that if you want to be happy, you should be willing to sacrifice for others and not for your own self. Means, avoid sense gratification and try to do something for others, sacrificing your time or your energy, skills, whatever it is. So that was a shock for them because that's completely opposite to what they were used to. So now one may question, what is this sacrifice and why should anybody sacrifice anything? So we go to Bhagavad Gita, some shlokas. There we can see that there is Bhagavad Gita in 4.30, in Prabhupada's purport, states that sacrifices help one to become cleansed of the sinful reactions of material existence. So many of us, we know that the material existence, there's many reactions that keep coming. And how does one cleanse himself of the reaction? So sacrifice is one of the methods. Now also there is, in the fifth canto, there is a shloka about Nunam pramatta kurite vikarma et indriya pritayo apranoti na sadhumanye yata atmanoyam asanati kleshada ashadeha. That shloka, Prabhupada again writes that sense gratification is the root cause of material existence. Sacrifice is a way to control one's senses and move beyond the platform of sense gratification towards the eternal spiritual platform of full knowledge, bliss, and life. This is a clear indication why one should perform any sacrifice. I had, like when I was in Greensboro, I was trying to preach to one of my very close dear friends who was in Texas at that time, and I told them that that there is this ISKCON temple nearby where you are living, try to go there on weekends, on Sundays, and attend to the program, and it will really help you. Because he was a close friend of mine, I really wanted to help him. He said, you know, because you're my friend, I will try to do, but I am afraid if you go there, they will always ask for donations, and I don't want to lose my money and give to them. So then I was surprised at the response, and then I felt later on, I didn't approach them. I said that the time is going to tell them, teach them. But later on, when I was going through the Bhakti Shastri course, Isopanishad, the answer was very clear there. In fact, all of us know, Isa Vashyam Idam Sarvam Yat Kinchit Chagatyam Jagat, which means everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. The key word is owned here. So that means what we normally consider as our property is really that of the Lord. So for example, we might think this body is ours. And however, if you see all the organs inside, such as our heart, the lungs, or the brain, they were not created by us, nor did we buy it from any shop, nor did our parents buy them for us. It is created. It is created by nature, which is run by God. Now thus, this body really belongs to God. Now the food also that we eat, is though we're buying it from the stores, it's actually created by nature. We know that agriculture is the one that creates all the grains. So thus, we can see that both the food that we eat, as well as our body, it actually belongs to the God. So now somebody might say, I actually paid for this food that I'm buying in the shop, So I should be the owner. How can you say that God is the owner? Now, this is similar to saying that there's a thief that steals from a person, from a house, and then he tries to sell that object to another person who buys it. And he's saying that basically I am the new owner, but he has actually bought it from a thief. So if they actually go to the government and say that the original person who from which the thief stole, if he reports to the government or the police, who are they going to catch? They'll definitely catch the thief, but the last person who bought it from the thief also is at fault. Why is he at fault? Because he has bought a stolen good, and ideally we should check that we should buy only genuine goods and not stolen goods. So thus, they are also implicated by the loss of government. Similarly, we can see that actually the laws of nature, they act in such a way that there's a proper way of utilizing the property of God to avoid getting implicated by its laws. So in Bhagavad Gita, third canto, which is ninth verse, tat karmano nyatra, lokoyam karma bandhana. So that is giving a proper way of utilizing the property of God. Meaning, if it's okay to take some of the things that are there in the nature, we can utilize it, but we should do any work as a sacrifice for Vishnu, otherwise it causes bondage in this material world. So even Krishna is advising Arjuna to perform his duties for Krishna's satisfaction, and that way he will always remain free from bondage. These are the reasons why anybody would need to be sacrificed, and it's essential. We can also then look at Bhagavad Gita, fourth canto. There's a few types of sacrifices. In one, the first one is sacrificing one's possessions. If we have, like our time is a possession, like we do some service, or we might donate some money, or we might use our strength and skills as a sacrifice. That's called dravya yajna. And then there's also sacrifice in austerities. We can perform austerities. We can, for example, fasting on Ekadashi, which is a sacrifice. Tapo, it's called tapo yajna. And then there is yoga yajna, which is a sacrifice in eightfold mysticism, it says, in the purport of fourth chapter, 28th verse. And then jnana yajna, which is when you study Vedas and Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam for getting knowledge, transcendental knowledge about the Lord. That is also a type of sacrifice. So, as one starts becoming selfless, we realize that initially most people are quite selfish, and later on, if you do want to be selfless, when you start becoming selfless, then they might start sacrificing for their family, or if they want to go beyond the family, they may go to a community. They might help the community. We see Walmart, many times they say, okay, give back to the community. They're trying to give some of the resources back to the community and make it better. Or in other further cases, somebody might sacrifice for their country. It's like in the case we discussed right in the beginning about Nirmaljit Singh. But in Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, there is one verse. Says ato grihakshetra sutatta vittar janasya mohoyam aham mameti. What it says is actually that in this the attraction between the male and female is the basic conception basic reason for the material entanglement. So if somebody has that, due to that attraction, they will think that this is mine, this is my body, and this is my house, this is my property, this is my relatives, and so on. And that is just only illusion, and I and mine is actually, it's extended selfishness. It means my community, my country is also sort of selfish, but it's extended selfishness. And in Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, that third verse, there is a statement by Prabhupada that says, by Krishna says basically that somebody does a sacrifice, performing that sacrifice in knowledge is better than just sacrifice of material possessions. So he's advising Arjuna that any sacrifices of work should all culminate in transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, it's not of any value. So the point here is that there are various levels of sacrifice, and if somebody does a sacrifice for Vishnu or for the Lord, that is always better than a mere sacrifice from a material consideration. Now we hear the story of Dadiji, who did such an act. He was able to do the highest sacrifice in order to please Lord Vishnu, and he gave up his life. He was from Satya Yuga. So as it is, there are many good qualities of the Satya Yuga people, but he was exceptional, who is remembered for his act of the sacrifice. His father was named Adarvan, and who was none other than a son of Brahma directly. So he had very high lineage. And he is the one who authored Atharva Veda, which we all have heard of. Also, you have heard of Kardama Muni. So his daughter, one of his daughters is Chitti, who was Dadichi's mother. And one of his son name is Pippalada, who is the author of one of the Upanishads, very popular Upanishads, called Krishna Upanishad. Now this Dadichi, he was actually not directly devotee of Lord Vishnu, but he was a very good, great devotee of Lord Shiva. Now Shiva, of course, as we have heard, is the greatest Vaishnava. In fact, we see he himself says to Mother Parvati that there's the one sloka in the fourth canto. This sattvam vishuddham vasudeva shabditam it iyate tatra pumana pavrita sattve chatasmin bhagavan vasudeve yadoksha jome namasaviti yate. There he's saying that actually he spends all his time always thinking of Krishna. He says basically that when somebody does such pure Krishna consciousness on his being always obeisances to Krishna in his mind, then automatically Lord Vasudeva reveals, he is revealed without any covering. So which is the way when somebody is able to completely focus on the Lord, always thinking of him, always paying obeisances in his mind, then sometimes he might even forget about his surroundings. And that was the case when Lord Shiva says that, you might have heard of the Daksha story when he forgets to offer, recognize arrival of Daksha, and because of which Daksha offends Lord Shiva later on. So, Dadichi was, as a person, he was very accomplished in knowledge. He had Veda's knowledge so well he learned, and he was also performing many austerities for several years. And he was so good in the Vedic knowledge that there was one specific subject called, it's called Madhu Vidya. And he was the first to understand that knowledge. And it's sort of used to bring back somebody who's left his body to make him alive again. That is what that Madhu Vidya is used for. So he was the one who learned that first. And he also had learned about Narayan Kavacha, which is a type of yajna performed to protect one's body so well that nobody can destroy it. Now, he passed on this knowledge to a person named Prastha, who is father of Vishwarupa, who actually utilizes that Narayana Kavacha for Indra in a specific scenario, which we'll talk a little bit later. Now, why I'm mentioning this is to also we understand that Dadichi's knowledge is Dadichi had some very advanced knowledge compared to many other people of that time, because this Narayana Kavacha and Madhu Vidya was not easily available to many people. Very, very few people that knew that knowledge at that time. So, we can quickly see, briefly go over the story of what was the need, why Dadichi had to give up his life. Lord Indra was seated in the heavenly kingdom, and everybody was praising him. During that time, Brihaspati, who is Lord Indra's spiritual master, enters that assembly. Now, when the spiritual master enters an assembly, ideally, it was the duty of Indra to respect, to recognize and respect him. But for some brief moment, he was sort of engrossed in his own acts at that time, and he forgets to recognize Brihaspati. And the same thing happens to all the other demigods. They also sort of offend Brihaspati by not recognizing and paying respects to him. Now, when that happens, Brihaspati immediately wants to teach Indra a lesson, and he immediately leaves that assembly. And shortly afterwards, Indra realizes his mistake. And when he realizes, he tries to look for Brihaspati and try to apologize. But by that time, Brihaspati really wanted to teach him a lesson, and he sort of disappears. Nobody can see him. And pretty soon after that, the demons, who are always looking for an opportunity to win over the heavenly kingdom, they come and fight the demigods and occupy the heaven. So Indra loses, demigods lose, and they are sort of kicked out of heaven, so they don't have a place to stay. And in that situation, they go to Lord Brahma. Now, Lord Brahma tells them, first of all, chastises them, and he tells them the real reason. He said, why you lost is because you offended your spiritual master. So we can learn from that how important it is to not offend our Vaishnavas and spiritual masters. And so Indra really apologizes to Brahma and says, okay, what should I do? How can I correct the situation? Now Brahma gives him an advice saying, since he is being one of Mahajanas, he knows the right dharma, right way of acting. So he tells them to go to Vishwarupa, and ask him to be the priest for the demigods. Because Brihaspati was the earlier priest, he was the head priest of the demigods, and he is not available anymore. So they needed a priest. So they asked them to approach Vishwarupa and perform this yajna for Narayana Kavacha, so that Narayana Kavacha can be given to Indra and make him very strong, so that he can defeat the demons. So that is the reason why Brahma advises him to approach Vishwarupa. Now, Vishwarupa, when Indra approaches Vishwarupa, who is quite young, he was in age, so Vishwarupa agrees it's a good opportunity to be a head priest, and he accepts that position and performs. He had learnt how to perform the yajna for getting Narayana Kavacha. So he learnt it from his father, Trashta. So he takes that, performs the yajna and gets Narayana Kavacha for Indra. And Indra becomes quite strong and performs. He goes back and he fights the demons, and they win the war and occupy their heaven back. At the same time, to avoid future defeats, Indra continues, asks Vishwarupa to continue this yajnas to keep them strong. Now, at one moment, Vishwarupa's mother actually is related to the demons. So, his father's side is related to demigods. So, Vishwarupa has somewhat of a soft heart for the demons. Now, he didn't want the demigods to completely destroy demons, so he was secretly performing some ablations to give some strength to the demons as well. And Indra notices this. And as soon as he notices, in a fit of anger, he cuts off the heads of Vishwarupa, who has three heads. So now when that happens, obviously it's another mistake. Initially he had made one mistake of offending Brihaspati. Now he killed a Brahmana directly in a fit of anger. Now Trashta, who was the father of Vishwarupa, he immediately, when he heard of his death of his son, Vishwarupa, then he wants to take sort of revenge and have Indra killed. So he performs one powerful yajna from which Dhritarashtra comes out. Dhritarashtra is so powerful that when he was created, his only goal was to kill Indra. Okay, and he was through the process of yajna, he was given so much strength that nobody can do anything to him with any conventional weapons. Means none of the existing weapons at that time could be used to harm or defeat Vishwarupa. So what it meant was Vishwarupa immediately goes back and fights with the demigods, and they again occupy the heaven. At this time, now Indra he goes to Lord Vishnu, asking what the solution is. Normally, when this type of thing happens, we have seen Vishnu takes some incarnation and helps the demigods. In the past, there have been many incarnations, like when Hiranyakashipu came, when Hiranyaksha came, and different scenarios. Lord Vishnu comes and directly in some incarnation and helps. But in this time, the purpose for which Indra came was somewhat, he had committed offenses, mistakes and so on. So Lord Vishnu does not come directly. He tells him to approach Sage Tadichi. He says, you have to make one weapon which is not conventional, and that weapon has to be made from Dadichi's bones. Now, why Dadichi's bones? Because Dadichi has performed Narayana Kavacha Yajna, and his bones are really, they're like very, very strong. And also, he had got some bones from Lord Shiva, who was his dear god, to whom he always meditated on. He had given him bones to make him very, very strong. Now, together, that Adichi's bone, if it's used to make a weapon, that's called Vajrayud, that can be used to kill Vitrasura. So this is the background about the need now for a weapon to be made from Dadichi's boss. Now, Indra goes to Dadichi, demigods go to Dadichi and ask him for his boss. Now, this is a funny part that when Dadichi, being so elevated and his he's been meditating for so long, performing austerities, penances, and he's got a very, very long life. Nobody could kill him. That's the type of boon he got from Lord Shiva. He could only leave his body on his own will. Otherwise, he would live for very, very long. With all that, when the demigods approach him, he just says that, "Oh, demigod, one who has no compassion for humanity and its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings." This is what he says. One of the points to note at that time is when Dhritarashtra was occupying the heaven, he was in charge of even the Varuna and the demigod of rain, water, and so on. So the people of the world at that time were not having any water. So now Dadichi sees that his sacrifice of his life is going to help all the people as well as all the demigods. And he also asks, "Why would you want me to give my life?" And he realizes that the demigods have been advised by Lord Vishnu to approach him for that. Then immediately he agrees. He says, "If Lord Vishnu has asked you, then I am ready to give my life." And he has, using his yogic powers, he leaves his body immediately without not wasting much without asking for any more time. Now Indra gets those bones, makes the vajrayud, and utilizes it to kill Dhritarashtra and then restore normalcy to the world. So in this way, Dadichi was his sacrifice has become so glorious, primarily because it helped the full world, and he did that out of complete selflessness and with the advice from with a view to please Lord Vishnu. Now, for a moment, we see what is our own Srila Prabhupada, how what type of sacrifices he has done, and how does it sort of compare with generally sacrifices we have been talking about in the beginning about different types of sacrifices. Now, Prabhupada, as we all know, he used to have such a love for the Lord, he was willing to do anything to satisfy the Lord. One nice story about if you're familiar, with Radha Ras Bihari in Mumbai. When they were building that temple, Prabhupada was in mid-70s, and they had very little money to build the temple. And there was very lot of opposition to build a temple from the local political parties and rich people. They were trying to completely put roadblocks and stop Prabhupada to take that land, own it, and build stuff there. But then, when the devotees asked Prabhupada, he said that actually he promised Radha Ras Bihari that he was going to build a temple there in Juhu. So he had total faith that because I made this promise to Krishna and it will be fulfilled. So he never gave up. And when Prabhupada's disciples, at that time he didn't have really any support from disciples in India, but most of his followers were from the West. So he was, they were thinking that why would anybody do this? It's like almost impossible. You are fighting a battle against the impossible. But Prabhupada was he had not given up, and finally, by the grace of Krishna, it did happen, and we can see how nicely the temple has come up now, in Juhu. So this was telling us that the devotees of disciples of Prabhupada would see how Prabhupada, with his faith in Krishna, was doing tremendous sacrifices, knowing that he will be pleasing Krishna and his Guru. So that's what was his strength. Now, if we just for a moment look at how, what is like ISKCON that Prabhupada has founded, it is, if you want to compare it with the way that Vaidehi Vajrayu was, you can sort of really say ISKCON is Prabhupada's Vajrayu. Because you can see how ISKCON can remove the demoniac elements from Kali Yuga people and establish peace for long term in this world. Why would we say that? Because we see so many wars, so many atrocities happening in terms of, we can see so many cases and so many people in the prison, so many bad news about killing of animals, killing of people and so on. So many things are happening. But by this, somebody practices Krishna consciousness under the guidance of Prabhupada's ISKCON, we can see that pretty soon they all automatically develop good qualities. And they become very peaceful and they start spreading that peace to the rest of the world. By default, we know it is, for one, they immediately stop any killing of the animals as such. And by chanting or by doing sankirtan, automatically there is a lot of good that happens to the world. In fact, many places in the world, people know that sankirtan even can bring rains. It automatically removes many, many problems that otherwise people don't have any solution for. There are several examples like that. So one of the key things that we can see is Prabhupada, he says in Bhagavatam purpose that basically in the sixth canto that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, all of them really were in a position, they were in a very good material position. They had like the six Goswamis were in very high positions. But they sacrificed their full, all the positions, their life, just for the spreading the religious principles to the whole world. Now, without the work of the six Goswamis, where would they be? So this is completely a selfless sacrifice that we can really appreciate. To what extent they have reached out to, how many people have been transformed by their work. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even at a young age, he was able to take up sannyas and just for the purpose of preaching to the whole world. Thus, I would say that it should really inspire us that Prabhupada even asked that anybody who has any effort, any time, skills, he sincerely requests them to join the Krishna consciousness movement so that they can spread this movement to the whole world and make it a better place. Now, when I was in Greensboro, I was thinking from year to year, years were passing by, and I was just working very hard and not really spending much time either studying Prabhupada's books or trying to spread the movement, preach to even affect a few people, like that was not happening. So one day, after speaking to some Prabhupada disciples, I realized that if I just continued in the same way, pretty soon we'll see life is going to just pass by, and we would not have done anything for serving the service of Guru or Prabhupada. So that's when I sort of thought, let me first take some time off to read Prabhupada's books in depth, and with that knowledge, try to see to whatever extent I can help other people. And that's when the whole idea of coming to Mayapur Institute to study Bhagavatam and or Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav came up, and we spent now over 3 years studying those books. And while studying, I realized more and more how it was really a good, great decision. Otherwise, I would not have got any sort of realizations and time to read all those books. And meeting with many of the Prabhupada's disciples here who have done really, if we hear their stories, the amount of sacrifice they have done and the amount of services they have done to the movement and to the whole world in terms of book distribution, in terms of austerities they took up, just staying in the temple and performing all the services without expecting any remuneration and so on, we get really highly inspired. And we meet so many of them here, being the world headquarters in Mayapur. Many of the disciples and Maharajas, they visit very often. Every year you get the chance to meet with them, hear from them, hear their stories, and so on. But Prabhupada in the Canto 6 says, the Krishna consciousness movement meets many exalted, learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive God consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's a clear request from Prabhupada how it's going to help. There's one quote from Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He says, as we offer service to others with no expectation of reward, the Lord in the heart becomes more available to us and provides for our needs, because we have removed the wheels that hide the truth. This is so much, when we hear this quote first, they sound good, but as we often read them, we find that how true it is, we start realizing. We can see, I've met with one Prabhupada disciple, and he was saying that he had 3 daughters, and when Prabhupada asked him, what are you doing? He said he was doing civil engineering. And Prabhupada said, there's a lot of civil engineers, you should become a preacher. Then he just thought about it, and within a few weeks, he was very young, in his early 30s, and he immediately left his job in the U.S. and started full-time preaching. And then when we met them, we said, how did you take such a decision? And you said you have 3 daughters. Was it not that you felt, how were they going to sustain their family and so on? He said, only thing we did was just we were serving. But at the same time, we were praying to the Lord that we are always going to take care of, I mean, we are always going to serve you. Please, you take care of the family. And that's it. So what Lord was able to provide to that family, and by the right age, all the daughters got very well settled, very well married, all automatically it was sort of, without any extraneous effort from them. When it was time for marriage, somebody used to come and approach them and say, yes, we want to marry your daughter and so on, and that's how it happened. So when I read this particular quote, we see how the Lord actually provides for our needs when we completely are serving Him or even serving other devotees. So in conclusion, I can say that Dadiji's sacrifice became very famous because with his sacrifice he pleased Vishnu. So Vishnu wanted him to make that to offer his life for that purpose of welfare of the world. But at the same time, because he did that, he was liberated immediately. So it was good for him ultimately. And Prabhupada also sacrificed his life to spread his own movement and completely in the order of his guru and to please Krishna. Well, sacrifice is sort of essential to liberate ourselves from this material world and to please Guru and the Lord. I would now open the call for questions.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, Dhanvat Pranam. Very wonderful class, very inspiring. In fact, I was making notes while you were speaking. So thank you very much, Prabhu. And a very nice realization about how the sacrifices were made by Srila Prabhupada disciples and the Goswamis and all that you have said about. Thank you very much, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu. Are there any other comments or questions?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanvat Pranam, Augustina, Prabhupada, and Guru. Thank you very much for such a wonderful class. Hare Bol, Dhanvat. Jai Shri Radhe.
Thank you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanvat Pranam. Thank you for such a beautiful class. You explained something, everything so clearly. Thank you so much for this class today.
Dhanvat Pranam, Mataji. Thank you very much for encouraging us. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. This is Kamudhi Kidasi from Baltimore. Nice to hear your nice voice, and very nicely you have explained about it, how one should sacrifice for others. It's very nice. Thank you very much. Hold on. Bolo.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. This is Jai Goswami Das. How are you?
Dhanvat Pranam, Prabhuji. Thank you very much. Nice to hear your voice.
How is the family? Mataji and the boys?
Oh, everybody, we're doing really wonderful. And we're missing you for the Gaur Purnima festival here.
Well, this time I decided not to come. Maybe next year.
Oh, Prabhuji.
But it's good to hear your voice today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you for that songbook. You may not. Okay. Haribo.
Haribo.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Very, very nice class. Your family is an inspiration for all of us. This is Lalitangi Radhadevidasi from Charlotte. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, what were the sacrifices? You said tapo yagna, yoga yagna, jnana yagna. Which was the first one that you said, Prabhuji?
Dravya yagna, Prabhu. The first one is Dravya yagna, where okay. We sacrifice material possessions.
Right, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, this is Damodaran Das. I have a very esoteric question for you. So, the sacrifice of the Dhiti is Atmadah. So, how do the scriptures reconcile this with Atmahatya or suicide? As we know, a lot of belief systems encourage to perform Atmahatya. And in the modern world, we have what's known as suicide bombers. And they think they're doing it for their greater cause, for their religion. So how do our scriptures reconcile this thing. I know that atmahatya is not allowed according to the Vedic concept, because if you terminate your life prematurely, you have to come back again to finish all the karmas that one was supposed to accomplish in this lifetime. So in relation to the Vichi sacrifice, how do you reflect on that? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu. It's a wonderful question, a very apt question. Yes, somebody that does like suicide bombers, they might think they are helping. Mostly in those cases, at least the ones, they might be helping their family members, or they might be even helping a whole community. That's what they would be thinking. That's how they would have been trained, or even you can say brainwashed. So our scriptures, that's, there is always a reconciliation mechanism. Guru Sadhu Shastra, it has to be always aligned. So we have heard in the beginning that when we said Ato Griha Kshetra Sutapta with Janasya Mohoyam Aham Mameti, any sacrifice done for our family or for a community or for a country on the grounds of it's an extended selfishness when it comes to, unless it is really to please Lord Vishnu or God, it would be, it is not really recommended. Means it is not real approved sacrifice. So we have to, when we have see where is the Lord, how are we satisfying Him? And that's not nothing to do with any selfish considerations. That's when it would be, and at the same time, you're not hurting others, or you're not causing hurt to other living beings by doing such a sacrifice. So in the case of suicide bombers, for example, they are hurting and killing other people. So that would not be completely bona fide. And so we have to always look at both this Guru Sadhu Shastra. So in Shastra, it should have said, it should be a reference. And in our spiritual master to whom they have dedicated their life, they should have given them an advice. And also, they should not hurt other people, unless it's like a, in the case of Arjuna, Lord Krishna himself was advising him what to do, and like his do the prescribed duties. The prescribed duty of a Kshatriya was to fight when there is Adharma, they should fight in the war. And he was doing that on the advice of Lord Krishna. So, so in that perspective, we can say atmahatya, when it is done, not in accordance to Guru Sadhu Shastra, and not in accordance with really giving help or to making the as a sacrifice to please the Lord and Guru, then it's really not recommended. Does it make sense, Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you very much for the explanation. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Can we have just a few more minutes? If one more question, if anyone has.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shyama Gauri Devi Dasi. Yes.
Dhanyavad Sunam Mataji. Nice to hear your voice.
For the wonderful class, Prabhuji, and like Lalitangi Mataji said, your family is the inspiration for us. You went to Mayapur and kids are learning in Mayapur. So it's very wonderful, Prabhuji. Really. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your kind words, Mataji. Okay. Praveen Prabhu, I think maybe if there's no other questions, we'll be able to wind up now.
Yes, Prabhu. If there are no, anybody has any questions? Yes, Prabhu, I think we can end the meeting here. Thank you so much, Prabhu. And we would request you to come more often to the conference call and inspire us.